Good morning. Thank you for listening to Step Connections Podcast, Episode 3. Our podcasts are all based around the central theme of what it takes to be successful. My name is Ethan Bazinet, and I am here with...
Patrick Pagora.
Liam Lawler.
Miguel.
Daniel.
Zev.
Megan.
Sierra.
Lauren.
Today we have Mr. Bazinet, who works in the Connecticut State Capitol. Thank you for being here, Mr. Bazinet.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Now, Sierra will start us off with a bit of background information.
Could you please explain your occupation in depth?
In depth, okay. So, officially, I'm a communications specialist for the Connecticut House Republican Party. What that means is I'm actually in public relations. I handle six state representatives directly, so I handle all their press. So that means press releases, photographs, event coverage, any of those kind of things, that whatever, you know, whatever they need to be successful as a state representative and to communicate with their constituents. My personal state rep is not one I work for, which is kind of fascinating, but I'm in Wallingford, you're right here, and there are four state reps that cover Wallingford directly, and I work for one of those guys. And even though I'm not in his district, he's still in my town, if that makes sense.
So now we're like talk about your childhood. So where are you from?
I'm from a small town in Massachusetts. When I grew up there, there was more cows than people. You know, roundabout. And it was a veteran community. It really was. There were about 8,000 people named Dudley, Massachusetts, which no one's heard of. So Sturbridge, everyone's gone through Sturbridge, I assume, on the way somewhere up better. Dudley's about 15 miles east of there, right on the Connecticut border. It's a tiny little place. My parents still live there. It's a wonderful place. I can't afford to live there and commute all the way down here for my work, though.
Who was your biggest inspiration when you were younger? Why?
All right, so this is a fascinating thing. This is my second career in public relations. My first career, I was a photojournalist, a newspaper photojournalist, for almost 20 years. And that started in school. So where you guys sit now, actually close to where you sit now, maybe a year later, I believe ninth grade or so is when I really picked up a camera and got super focused on it. And I had an instructor, a high school teacher, Carl Schubert, one of the most amazing people you'll ever meet. He saw that I had an ability. At least he told me I had an ability. I don't know. It seemed to work. I had a career out of it. And he basically sat down with me and he said, you can do this. You can do this. So I immediately abandoned all hope of becoming a lawyer. I didn't ever want to become a lawyer. So what I did was I took everything I had and I threw it into that photography program. So I did photo one, photo two, advanced photo, ran out of classes because it's high school and they don't have that many, and started signing up all my individualized studies. All my study halls went to the dark room. So in the morning before school, I would set up the dark room and then I would go to class, obviously, you would do whatever, English, math, whatever it was. And then any free period I had, I would be back in the darkroom, either printing or working. Or actually, my senior year, I sort of taught a class unofficially. I did the darkroom portion because they were budget cuts. Carl said, no, I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to teach all these classes myself. And, you know, he was insane. But, you know, basically what he did was he pulled me aside and said, if I teach the classroom, can you keep an eye on the darkroom? And I said, well, of course. So that's kind of where it started. And then college after that. College, I went to a small school upstate New York, Elmira College. I went tuition-free.
Nice.
So here's the thing, kids. When someone's going to hand you free school, make a very big decision. Free school for, you know, for a place that doesn't exactly fit where you want to go professionally, or pay a ridiculous amount of money to go to the school, you know, quote unquote. I chose to get out of college without major debt. And I went tuition-free. Thankfully, I was very fortunate. Not everyone has that ability. My mom worked for a school, and they had an exchange benefit plan, which was amazing. So I got to do that and move along there. I created my program. No one at Elmira College had my degree before me. In fact, I don't believe anyone has had it after me. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Media Communication and Visual Studies, specializing in photography. I wrote that. I created that title. I created everything about it. And it was great. I got to spend a year in England. I did my junior year across in England, and it was a life-changing experience. And then I finished my schooling years later. I finished there and went to work, and then I got my master's degree at Quinnipiac a couple years ago. Well, now, a long time ago. Again, a fellowship. So someone basically threw free school at me, and I said, thanks. I did my master's degree. It cost me about $500 out of pocket. Yeah.
Wow.
Mr. Bukakis can't believe it right
now. Yeah.
I was really lucky. I chose to work in professions that didn't pay a lot of money, but were done for love. You know, journalism is a love thing. You don't make a lot of money. But what you do is you do it because of, you know, the reasons, you know, like why you do it. You know, every day was different. Every single day I got up and I saw someone different. I saw them on their best day. I saw them on their worst day. but I saw other people, and I'm an extrovert, if you haven't figured it out.
Where did you go to high school?
Oh, so okay. So I went to a small school in Dudley, Mass. Called Shepherd Hill Regional High School. And what was really fun about Shepherd Hill Regional High School, SHRHS, we were two towns, one school, 7th grade through 12th grade. Right, we were regional. We had 1,200 kids total.
Hmm.
Yeah, think about Wallingford. You know, we have two high schools, you know, and we have two middle schools. And I went to a town, a high school and middle school, all in the same building that had two towns in it, and we only had 1,200 kids. So it made for a really interesting way to grow up. But you knew everybody. And then, you know, small town. Even Wallingford, as big as it is, it's still a small feel. And this side of town versus the other side of town, you have those feels.
What was your favorite subject?
Yeah, photography. Absolutely. I'm not a good math person. I'm really good about finances as far as, you know, not spending more than I make. And that's a core principle of my life, which is, you know, if you can't afford it, don't spend it. But to be honest, photography is really where it was at for me. And this switch to PR later in life was an opportunity. You know, opportunity knocks. You've heard that. You know, they say about, well, sometimes you got to open that door. So photography was absolutely it. I didn't want to do anything else. And I still kind of don't. And, you know, it's one of those things. You make choices and you move around and things are fluid and your life changes. But I will always have that. I have my camera in the car at all times. I have at least a camera in the car. There are several all around the house. They're always, you know, there's one right here. They're always accessible, you know. And you should always be taking pictures.
Good. What was your first job outside of college?
Outside of college? I worked, well, it's really funny. I worked two jobs. My first full-time job was at newspaper. But prior to that, because, you know, when you get out of college, it's hard to find a job.
Yeah.
So I was straying. I did an internship at the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, the newspaper there. My internship turned into a freelance job or a stringer position where they had three or four of us on call, sort of. They would say, all right, tomorrow we have three assignments. We need three guys to pick it up, or women. They would call us up, you know, can you do this? Can you do that? You know, and you pick up assignment here or there. But also I worked at a party goods store. Stocking shelves because I needed to make some money, and you know, you got to pay your gas bill and you got to put insurance on your car and you do what you have to do to make a living. So he was one of the best bosses in the history of the world. I mean, he understood that I was not going to be a stock boy for the rest of my life, thankfully. And he allowed me to leave in the middle of the day if I had to chase news assignments for the newspaper. So if there was a car accident, fire, whatever, they would call me because of where I worked in our bureau at the time. I was in South County, which they were broken up into four regions. And I lived and worked in the South region. So it was harder for them to reach that spot from Worcester. It was like 30 minutes away, 20 minutes. So what they would do is they would call me. Oh, there's something happening. Can you get there? And my boss allowed me to leave, you know, his job to run out, do another job and then come back, you know, hours later or whatever. He just, yeah, was incredible. Great guy. He also, best salesman I've ever seen, could sell anything to anyone. Incredible stuff. Yeah, I wish I had that ability.
So now we're going to ask you a few questions about your current career.
Sure.
What is a typical day in your life like?
Oh, it's fascinating. It's never the same. There's a lot of sitting around, and there's a lot of watching television. And it doesn't sound as great as it actually, or it sounds better than it actually is, because the television I watch is all state capital stuff. So I work in Hartford at the legislature. So three branches of government. I work, obviously, in the legislative branch, you know, not the executive or judicial. And I work for one of the caucuses. There are four caucuses, Republican and Democrat, but House and Senate. They're split. So there's, you know, one side is Republican, one side's Democrat, and then there's House and Senate. So they each have separate staffs. They each have separate goals within reason. I mean, we all sort of pushing the same thing to influence the laws of the state to make things better. But what I do is I support six state representatives directly. And that covers everything. So press means literally events, dinners, press releases, photo ops, responding to stupid things they do and trying to spin that. I mean, part of my job is spin, which is, you know, I'd like to think I'm good at my job. I don't know. I have my moments. But I also work really hard to be honest, you know, and when something comes up, I try to confront it. I don't try to hide from it. I figure, you know, it's better to get in front of something and just be open about it. And if you did something stupid, then ask forgiveness. And that's why I run my reps. Now, other people will run theirs differently, and I have a good relationship with mine, and we work back and forth, but it's really a give and take. Each personality is very different. So the way I write for some people, I have to write differently for others. If I'm writing a press release to, you know, to work into their quotes and things like that. It's, you know, it's interesting, but it's never the same. And meetings, a lot of, you know, a lot of committee hearings, a lot of reading stuff I don't understand because I'm not a lawyer and everything. Have you ever read legislation? Have you ever read anything, a law of the state?
they're incredibly difficult to understand at times because they're written in lawyer language, which is not the way we speak. So I kind of, every day I become a subject expert on something for about 15 minutes, or maybe 20 minutes, just enough to get it on a press release so that it makes some sense that when it goes out to the newspaper or wherever they run it, then you guys will be able to read it and understand what happened. So pick any law, and it's, you know, if you actually read the law versus what you believe it to be, you would, it'd be amazing. It's eye-opening. But it's cool. That answers your question.
What do you enjoy about your job?
Oh, well, I enjoy being able to pay my bills. No, but that's a legitimate joke. I mean, so there's an old joke. I love journalism, so I talk about journalism. Let me slide back and forth. Journalism is a wonderful profession, and if you can make a living in it, it's even better. Every day is incredibly different. Every day is, you know, just good and bad. You get it all. The joke is that, do you guys know what the difference between a large pizza and a job in journalism is? A large pizza will feed a family of four. See, there's the joke. So there's a point in life when you have to start being pragmatic and you have to start thinking about, you know, finances and paying your bills and things like that, and opportunities knock. So I love journalism, and I didn't make a ton of money, but I was doing okay making it work. And then, bam, I get this opportunity. So what do I love about my job? I love making more money to do something I love to do. So I get to interact with people all day long, and I get to sit inside meetings, and thankfully not as many as some of the other people. But I sit inside meetings and I sit inside the chamber in the House of Representatives and I watch laws being made for the state, which is kind of neat. Sometimes I agree with them. Sometimes I really don't. But I have to kind of stifle my personal opinions a lot of times to do what the work is. So it's kind of, you balance good and bad, and you balance, you know, pro and con, and or I guess you balance your own ideas of what should happen and where we should go because you're not the elected state official. So you don't have that ability to decide. It's like, I can influence that in some ways. I can pull my reps aside and say, I think this is a bad bill or this is a good bill. But I love that communication, and I love seeing the inside of that process happening. You know, it's one of those things when you start to see it made, you know, have you ever heard about a sausage? You know, sausage is made, they shove everything together. That's exactly how legislation is made. And there are meetings and dealings and conversations had in hallways that influence the way the state moves. And it's really neat to watch. So that's kind of what I love.
Has this job ever stressed you out?
Yeah, all the time. Every job I've ever had, and this is, you know, I don't know if a lot of you guys work yet, but every single job I've had stresses me out in some way or another. And I think every job anyone has should stress you out in some way or another. I strive to be better than I was the day before. I fall short a lot. But what I do is I go in and I try to go in with an open mind and go, okay, how do I go in and make today better? And how do I do my job more effectively? And a lot of times what my stress comes from is not me or my job specifically, it's my coworkers. And I don't mean that to be a slight on all of them, because some of them are wonderful and everyone has their days. And I know that I drag people down occasionally as well. And if you ever met me more than 5 minutes, you understand I don't stop talking. So that really screws up a lot of their days, which I'm sure stresses them out. So it's a, you know, it's a small area we're all stuck in with all our cubes. But the stress comes from a lot of times when I work at one speed. And that might not be the same as your speed. And that doesn't mean that your speed is wrong or mine is right. It just means they're different. So part of, you know, becoming a professional and really trying to figure out how to navigate, you know, a professional career is learning how to deal with personality. And mine is really bold and out there, and I get it, and I'm loud. And the woman who sits right next to me, she's wonderful. She's incredibly the opposite of me. She's quiet, and she's, you know, just introverted, and I'm not. You know, so it makes an interesting dynamic when she literally sits right next to me and we talk over our cue ball all the time, and she approaches her people very differently than I approach mine. The way I counsel my reps about certain things in the media or how to respond to things is very different than she does. And that's what's really kind of fascinating is, you know, we have that, but those stresses come in when I may not agree with the way things are going or my rep may not agree with what I believe. And then we have those arguments. Ultimately, the boss prevails. And who's my boss in this situation? You know, the state rep. So if they decide this is what I want to do, then that's the way I have to support, and that's where some of that stress comes. But overall, I've been charmed that the stress that I have had in any career I've had or any job I've ever held, and let's face it, sweeping floors, my first ever job, you know, emptying trash cans at a car dealer when I was a kid, you know, there's stress there. So there will always be stress. School gives you stress. Everything is how you deal with that stress and how you work around that and how you figure out this I can change, this I can control, this I cannot. What am I going to lose sleep over? I try not to lose sleep over anything, and I do pretty well at that. But
stress does happen.
Did you make any sacrifices to get where you are today?
Probably. I mean, you know, I tell you what, I mean, I really have a great life and I'm doing well and I love my kids. But, you know, I'm pausing because it'd be funny. You know, you make choices and those choices all influence who you are. So I wouldn't be who I am without sacrifices or you know, luck I've had. But that being said, I mean, you know, in hindsight, maybe I should have stayed in Europe after college. That first year, I should have never come home. I think it would have changed my life drastically. So that would have been a sacrifice, but not really. So any of the sacrifices I've made aren't really sacrifices. They're all just choices. And, you know, you make those choices. I mean, would I have loved to have worked at a major, you know, international magazine as a photographer? Absolutely. It would have been awesome. But I chose to stay, you know, around here. And I chose to stay, you know, for a lot of reasons. One of those was I had a steady job. That's a great idea. Anything that pays your bills, you should stay there for a while and then figure out your next job. But then I also stayed for a woman. I mean, you know, and that, it's not a sacrifice, you know. So my wife and I, we met in college. She was from Connecticut. I was not. I looked for jobs here to be with her because she was getting a job in Connecticut. And so, you know, that's not a sacrifice per se. It's a choice in life direction. So I don't have any regrets or any like, oh, man, I should have, you know, should have done that. I don't have those regrets. So I don't find them to be sacrifices. Just life choices that pointed you in a different direction. And every choice you make changes who you are, no matter what that choice is. Every single choice, you know, sort of pushes you one way or the other. It's pretty neat.
Do you see yourself doing the same job for the rest of your life?
No. I, you know, sort of, I guess is a better answer. I can see myself staying in public relations. I can see myself staying in photography because even in PR, I still get to do pictures, which is really great. I'm just not as much. I'm not shooting daily. But the thing is, I don't want to close myself off and think that this is what I'm going to do. This is who I am. This is not my entire identity. I would love to own a bike shop, you know, a bicycle shop. I just, you know, I can't afford it because bike shops notoriously don't make a lot of money. So, you know, we go back to that thing of like, how do you pay your bills, feed your family, and do what you love? There's trade-offs. But I would love to think that I would be able to keep employed until I decide to retire. But I don't know if it'll be this job here. But it'll be some way interacting with people. I can't not be one of those. I'm not one of those people that sits quietly all day long. I mean, you met me 15 minutes here, and I haven't stopped yet. But I love PR. I mean, it's fun. It's an extension of journalism. It's a different side of journalism. So it carried on. So I had that great first career, you know, almost 20 years of, like, doing really cool stuff. And then I slid into this and I had to learn how to work that out. So it's been kind of a fascinating, you know, mix back and forth. But I don't know. I don't think I'll do this for the rest of my life, but I'll do something similar. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sorry for being so effusive.
We will now move on to success questions. What was your proudest moment?
Professionally? Wow. I would have prepared better for this. I don't know. Proudest moment? I don't know. I've had pictures show up in neat places. You know, that's kind of cool. When you go home to your parents' house in small town Massachusetts and there's a picture on the fridge from a magazine and the picture's, you know, quarter inch by quarter inch square. It's this tiny little, and it was cropped from what the original picture was, but my name was on it and my mom had it in the fridge. It's kind of neat, you know. It was Time Magazine, which is funny because it wasn't anything specific. I was the pool photographer, meaning I was the guy assigned to shoot for everyone else. So they didn't have 30 people in the same spot. They just were like, oh, you do it. Okay, I'll do it. So every picture I took went out to everyone. So if it was me or if it was you or anyone else, they would have been the same thing. But my mom was so excited about it. It's Time Magazine. I'm like, but I didn't work for Time. It just happened to go there. She's like, I don't care. So that's kind of proud. You know, I'm like mom proud. I don't know. I did a story years ago on a burn victim, which was really kind of amazing. You know, it was like 10 months I spent with her and her family. You know, in and out. I didn't spend the whole time with them. Dropped in and out of their lives. And that was pretty cool. It's a powerful project. The writer, Amy Montemarlo, now teaches. She left journalism to become a teacher, which is kind of neat. And it's a shame. Journalism lost, you know, a great reporter, but teaching gained a really good person. So there's a lot of career change out of journalism, and a lot of that comes from, you know, the money thing, but a lot of that also goes to break the next generation open and say, here, I can give you this. And so several of my friends left journalism to become teachers, and that's kind of neat as well. But yeah, proudest, yeah, probably the beige story. She was really amazing. And then, you know, in those little weird moments, like my mom tacking a magazine to the fridge, thinking that I worked for Time or something, which I clearly did not, you know, so it was kind of neat.
What is some advice that you would give to anyone with any career trying to be successful in their field?
Wow, can't get more specific than that. Some advice to anyone, anywhere, trying to be anything. Okay. Yeah, and it's a good question, because I think the thing is, it's an attitude. Understand who you are, become self-aware. And like I've said repeatedly, I'm an extrovert and I'm loud. I get it. So knowing who I am and how some people react to me makes a difference. Does that make sense? So I can go into a situation and know I kind of got to button it up a little bit, or I can be really who I am or whatever. But knowing that certain people react differently is really something you need to – trying to learn to read people and body language. And I'm still not good at it. And, you know, I'm in my mid-40s and I still mess up a lot. But that's part of it. So be open always to different things. Be open to different ideas. And understand that just because it's your idea doesn't make it the best idea. It could very well be the best idea. But you don't know that. And you don't know that until you listen to all the other ideas. And if you want to be – good and you want to be professional and you want to do it, be a team player, listen in, but understand when you need to speak up and say, no, this is not going to happen and this isn't the way we're going to do it. We're going to do it that way. And in PR, a lot of times my counsel comes, you know, late at night or in those random moments when something foolish happened, when someone did something or something happened that they didn't expect, it wasn't exactly good. They look to me for guidance, like, oh no, what do I do? And in that case is when you have to really, I reach out to a lot of other people. How would you approach this? And that's how I formulate my plan. So be open. Listen to other people. That'll help.
In your opinion, what is success?
Success, you know, I think it's defined by every person individually. I mean, what is successful? I worked for, as a journalist, I worked for a medium to smallish, let's call it medium, local newspaper. And I know people that would absolutely, that's their career goal. That would be the highlight of their lives. And, you know, I have other people that work for international magazines or people that work in communications, if you want to take my current career, that work in communications for the governor or for higher level, you know, even senators or, you know, even farther along. I mean, I don't know anyone currently that works for the president, but that'd be pretty cool. But, you know, you get to that point where success is defined by what you want it to be. You know, success doesn't have to be winning or losing a specific thing. It could be just achieving whatever those goals are. My first goals coming out of high school were to get a job as a photographer. I didn't care how or when or what. I just, that was my goal. And I succeeded. I achieved that goal. Then you set your next goal. So success should, you know, in my opinion, I don't think success ever really is achievable in a sense. Like, you can achieve some success, but you'll never get to where you want to go. I mean, what's my ultimate goal? To be able to retire early. But, you know, I'm going to struggle for that one for a little while. But, you know, success, I think, is a very nebulous concept. You know, what you decide to choose it is. If you're running a race, success obviously could be finishing the race. It's certainly winning the race would be success, right? If you're the first guy across the finish line, you won. You succeeded. But the guy who comes in last might just be happy to be there. He might just be like, oh, I made it. I ran 3 miles or whatever I did. So for me to say, you know, I've reached a point where I have a steady job and I have a boss that likes me, at least I think she does. She tells me she does, so that's good. And, you know, put myself in those positions. I could be, I'm successful to a lot of people and to myself, but I still, there's always something else. I'm always, what's the next thing? How can I do better? Can I move up? Can I do better? There's always another thing, but I'm, you know, success is self-defined, I think. I wouldn't let other people tell you you are or are not successful.
Do you think success and happiness go hand in hand?
I think they can. I think they do. I don't think you have to be successful, though, to be happy or happy to be successful. I think when you are successful, you are probably generally happier. I know I am. I mean, let's face it. When you come up short, it doesn't feel good, does it? So, you know, it's always nice to have a goal, achieve that goal. But I don't think that they are mutually exclusive, success and happiness. I think if you go into an event or into a career or anything and look at it and say, all right, what are my long-term goals? What can I achieve? How can I get there? And you're going to have some days when, you know, or weeks or months or years when you're just not happy. But that's okay, because, you know, there's always happiness coming somewhere. And it could be something small. Like, for me, success and happiness together could be, you know, just one minor part of my day trying to influence someone to do or say something to the media. So I speak with the state reps and they talk to the media a lot, or they, you know, they send out newspaper, press releases in newspaper or whatever, and trying to get them to understand the thing or say, well, I wouldn't say it quite like that. You know, you're trying to massage them so that they put out the message that you want, where, so they're not lying, but they're not, you know, they're not putting it out so it creates more confusion. Currently, one of our state reps has got a bill in, it's in committee, actually had a public hearing on Friday,
went really long, but that bill is essentially a three strikes law for juveniles. Do you guys know what three strikes laws are? Take a flying guess, anyone?
You have three chances before juvie.
Well, so three chances. This would have been, yes, close. This would have been three chances, not before juvie. This would have been three chances before transfer to adult court. Now, a lot of people are arguing about this. Like, well, that's terrible. You can't do that. But the point is that it's not the third chance, really. It's more like the fifth, the way our society's set up. So she's taking a lot of heat for it. So when we're messaging that release and we're messaging that whole thing, part of it is we want to avoid the three strikes terminology because that creates an immediate negative connotation. Instead, this is, you know, after your third felony conviction, or third felony arrest, rather, after being convicted for two felonies, this would only be felonies, and that's a really bad crime. That would put you in adult court. It wouldn't mean you're there for, you know, it's an interesting concept, and it's getting a lot of argument back and forth, but part of it is we're trying to massage that message so that it doesn't, you know, come off as negative. It's an interesting job, and it's interesting to try to see how that works, and that's success to me. If I can get it into the newspaper without them writing three strikes, that's a success for me. Does that make sense?
Do you, what is the biggest factor you attribute to your success?
Work. Hard work. Show up. Be the guy that shows up. Get there early. Stay late. So journalism is where I started this. When you're a newspaper photographer, a lot of the best photos come from before or after the event. So let's pick any event and say, okay, we're going to have a ribbon cutting for a new business. Great. Anyone with an iPhone can walk up and take a picture of 10 people standing in front of a room with a giant pair of scissors, right? So when you go to those things, you make that picture. That's your job. Okay, I'm a newspaper guy. I got to make this job. In PR, I have to write a standard press release, you know, so-and-so today did such-and-such. You know, these are basic things. So when you get there, you have to figure out. But getting there early, staying late, learning what you're doing, and really investing into the systems. Like I joked earlier about being a subject matter expert for 15 or 20 minutes or an hour. And that's what I do. I dive into a law or a legislation, proposed legislation, and I read about it. And then I try to figure out what it is. And then I try to distill that into whatever. So then I try to put that back out so that makes sense. So part of that is doing the research. So when I was a newspaper guy, you get there early and you look around. You're always looking. And if you ever get to see me at any event with a camera, my head is always on a swivel. The camera's always near my face. It's always right in my hands, both hands ready to go. So I just pick it up and shoot. Because if it's hanging on my shoulder, then I can't make my photo. And if I'm at the event only for the ribbon cutting itself, or if I'm only writing about this one specific thing without understanding the broader context of what I'm writing about, then I can't really succeed. So I need to be there. So newspapers, you get there, or photographers, you get there early, you stay late. That's when the true action happens. That's when people do things. That's when you get those tender moments and those photos that really tell a story, that 1,000 words, you know, pictures 1,000 words. I want to be able to do that. And in PR, it's the same thing. I want to be able to understand the law well enough, you know, or the legislation well enough that I can explain it to you or to a 90-year-old woman or, you know, a 65-year-old dementia, you know, adult man. I want to be able to put it in words that so they can understand. And that's, you know, that's success if you can bust that out and get there. And that's the key is, you know, understanding what you're doing and understanding that attention to detail makes a difference. I work really hard not to have spelling errors or especially grammar errors. I write around things a lot, which means if I don't exactly know how to get the phrase right or I don't exactly know the word and how I should lead in or out of it, it just doesn't sound right. It's clunky. You know, you ever write something and go, it just doesn't sound right? Do it every day. So I write around certain things. But I think it shows an attention to detail shows that you care. And when you care, people start to take you more seriously and that it all sort of snowballs. Everything's about your appearance and how that appearance is. And I don't mean just physically. I mean, you know, how you appear as a person, as a professional. What are you doing? Are you helping or are you always negative? Are you willing to go the extra mile? If your boss pulls your side and says, can you give me a, you know, hand? Can you do this? And you're like, wow, you know, I'm busy. I got other stuff. Well, they're going to go to someone else. And that other person's going to get, you know, yeah, I'll do it. I got it. They'll drop everything to do it. And they become the guy or the woman that they go to go get it. This person's not going to stop. They're going to work. And so then when, let's face it, sometimes in corporate land, you know, people lose their jobs and they look around, oh, budget gets cut. Who are we going to lose? They're going to get rid of the guy who's always positive and works really hard and always pushes to make the company better? Or are they going to look and go, this guy's really negative and he grumbles all the time.
He's good.
And he's late to work. You know, someone's going to be in trouble. And so I prefer to be the guy who's always willing to do what I can, you know, to help out. And, you know, it's a detriment at times. I mean, it, you know, physically sometimes it's a pain because then, you know, you're constantly running and you're tired. Or Even professionally, it sometimes slows down your job to help other people. What frustrates me, I think one of you asked earlier, what frustrates you? Oh, stress. And so what stresses me out at times is that when I'm doing my job and I'm doing the best I possibly can, and someone else falls a little short and they just expect that you're going to pick up the slack. Well, he'll take care. I don't know how to do this, but he'll do it. Well, that's great. I'll do it because, you know, that's my job. But what's frustrating is that the assumption is that I'll do it or that I'll take care of it. That's frustrating. And I find that everyone likes to pick on millennials a lot, and I do too. But I work with some of the most incredibly hardworking younger people, you know, in their mid-20s, early mid-20s. Then, you know, I like to joke about millennials being lazy or whatever, or they don't understand, they don't get it. But I tell you, some of them really do. And these kids, I call them as a joke, because they call me like the old man, but they work really hard, and they're really good at what they do, and they're attentive, and that's it. That's that same go-getter attitude. And I've seen people not get hired at jobs, and other people get hired specifically based on attitude, not about book learning or what they had for college degrees or whatever. It was straight on. They're equal, all things considered. This guy or this woman has the attitude I want to have in this office, and I want to work with these people. And I don't make the hiring decisions. You know, I would have some choices here and there that, you know, throughout my life that I would change. I've worked with a lot of people I'd never want to work with again. And I've worked with a lot of people that I would absolutely love to find a way to work with again. Does that make sense? And I hope that I'm one of those people that someday, you know, a bunch of my friends or coworkers look like, ah, he was really fun to work with. Man, he did a good job, and I'd like to do that again. Yeah. It's hard to get that. It's hard.
Would you redo anything in your past that might have made you more successful today?
Probably not. I'd love to say, yeah, I'd change this or that. I mean, to put me on the spot and try to think of one specific thing, no, I can't. Are there spots where I would probably love a do-over? Yes, everyone does, I think. But, you know, to honestly go back and to play that game is very difficult. Because every choice, I said earlier, every choice you make changes who you are as a person. So everything I've done, good and bad, has, you know, shaped me into who I've become. So would I love to go back and change a few things? Sure. Would I, you know, but if I had the actual opportunity, I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would, because that's going to change everything else from that point on, you know, back to the future here, right?
It's a chain reaction.
Yeah, we've messed with the space-time continuum. So, you know, so I don't have that ability, so I don't like to play that what if or, oh, I wish I could have, you know. Like, you do that, of course, right after an event or something goes wrong, but overall, no, I don't think I would. You know, there's no point. I mean, life's short. Keep moving forward. See what happens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Basnett, for taking time out of your schedule to speak with us today.
Sure. Thank you. You're welcome.
Hello. Do we have any other questions?
Yeah. Is there anything you guys want to talk about or anything you – I mean, I'm here. I already told my boss I'd be late today. So,
do you see the governor a lot?
I do. I see the governor a lot. We're in different parties. I'm a Republican.
Yep.
He's not. I will say the governor is an interesting guy. And I've known several of the governors now, and I don't claim to know him. I don't know Governor Malloy. I mean, I know of him. He knows my face in the sense that he knows I'm in the building. He would not be able to put my name
so
to my face.
Think
about his orbit. I mean, it's so vast. Governor Rell, prior to Governor Malloy, I actually was in her office the day she announced she wasn't going to run again. And I had just left journalism at that point. So it was kind of fascinating. I was only at the Capitol a couple of months. And I was in her office for that announcement, and a bunch of my friends who were still journalists were standing there, and they all looked at me, and I looked at them, and we all kind of looked at each other, and we had this moment because the writers all realized that no one had a camera. And this was the moment, you know, Governor Rell decided not to run. So this was – it's historic in a sense. It's not really going to make a picture that's going to last for 500 years. But it's one of those things that the newspapers all wanted that photo, and nobody was there. All the writers were there, but not a single photographer. And they all looked at me because they all knew what I did.
Yeah.
And I go, I'm just here. You know, like, I'm not working for news anymore. So just the – I mean, a bunch of people whipped out their phones and made it happen. But, you know, walking out, it was kind of a fascinating thing for me to be a part of a arguably a small historic event and not be photographing it. Just be standing there in a suit was kind of weird. But I see the governor quite a bit. I see the leaders far more. You know, Senator Fasano, obviously, is a Republican and one of Wallingford's senators. Well, and then Themis Claridis, of course, our House Republican leader. You know, I see her all the time. And then Senator Looney and certainly A to Z. They call Speaker Arizimowitz. You know, have you ever seen his name, Arizimowitz? It's really long, lots of C's and Z's.
Yeah.
So everyone just calls him A to Z because his name starts with an A and ends with a Z. Arizimowitz. And everyone knows him as A to Z. And it's really kind of funny because
And he's from just over the down the road in Sellington. So I see those guys all the time. And, I speak and interact with them all the time. The governor, not quite as much because they are a separate branch. And right now, not our party. So if we had a Republican governor, I probably would be a little more in touch with that group. But maybe not. It is very separate. The three branches are pretty separate, which is kind of fascinating because you don't think they really are. They are. It's neat.
Any other questions?
Anything else?
No. Nothing.
Right. Well, I just thank our listeners for listening to our wonderful podcast, and thank you for your time.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Hopefully, I didn't drag you all down here.